I'm Jackie from Cape Town in South Africa.
Andre from Brisbane.
I'm Ben Wale from Botswana.
Jim Panton from Edinburgh in Scotland.
I'm Lisa Bregno from Christchurch, New Zealand.
Nick Kivinji from Nairobi, Kenya.
I'm Vicky from Tel Aviv in Israel.
I'm Andy from Vancouver, Canada.
This is Harish from Bangalore in India.
I'm Brigitte Seipestein from Vrucht, the Netherlands.
I'm Dougie Nisbet from Durham in the UK. And you're listening to Run with Coach Parry.
Welcome back onto the next edition of Run with Coach Parry. My name is Brad Brown, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you on board once again. It is another week, as we record this and release it, it is the end of February. Can you believe it? 2 months into the new year, which means Comrades is looming. If you are running Comrades this year and you haven't checked out the Bonitas Online Success Seminar that we did just a couple of days ago, make sure you head over to coachparry.com. You can check out the replay on our website. It was an hour-long session, and it was amazing. So you'll find out exactly what you need to be doing right now, what you need to focus on for the next 4 weeks. We spoke about how many marathons and ultra marathons you should be running in the build up to Comrades. And we also spoke extensively about speed work. It's probably the question we get asked the most about Comrades training is how to or should you be incorporating speed work into your training. So make sure you go check that out. CoachParry.com is where you can find the replay. And you can also register for the next one if you haven't, so you don't miss it. It's coming up on the 25th of March. All you need to do is head over to CoachParry.com/webinar. To get all those details. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to be heading north to the UK to catch up with Danny Hill Welter. Danny's got quite an interesting story because she is pregnant and she is still training and wants to know how to continue training throughout her pregnancy. So lots of great tips here, just running-wise, but also lots of great advice if you are pregnant or if you know someone who's pregnant. So if you wouldn't mind sharing this, it would be great as well. And then also coming up on today's podcast, we're going to be announcing our next winner in the Biogen Journey competition. You heard from Hobo last week. He's down 20 kgs. And we want to help someone else on their Biogen journey. And I'll tell you exactly who this week's winner is towards the end of today's podcast. And if you'd like to win, all you need to do is use the hashtag Biogen Journey on the socials, and we could be picking you. So tell us what you're training for, what you need help with, and you could win 3 months access to the Coach Parry Online Training Club. The hashtag, once again, is hashtag Biogen Journey. And then we've got another pretty cool success story to share from our forums on the Coach Parry Training Club at the end of this podcast as well. So if you like us, like sharing and other people's successes, you're going to love this one. That's all coming up on the other side of our chat with Danny. Lindsay, welcome back on. Nice to touch base once again.
Yep. How's it, Brad? How are you doing?
Fantastic, thank you. And pretty excited about today's podcast because it's quite different to what we normally do here on Run. But I think it's an important thing to chat about and sort of how to approach things. And it's a great pleasure to welcome our next guest onto the podcast, who all the way in the UK, Danny Hill Welter. Danny, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Danny, we were joking before we started recording. Obviously, we're recording this. We can see each other on video. But where we are in South Africa at the moment, it's beautiful. Looks a bit chilly where you are.
It is absolutely freezing this morning. It's -2. I had to scrape the car coming out. It's grey and miserable right now.
I've got to say, Danny, I've got so much respect for anybody who lives, not just lives, but trains in environments like that. My brother lives in London and he sends me photos all the time when he's heading out for runs, and it's obviously you used to it. It's what you know. So it's not such a big deal, but I think for anybody listening to this in the Southern Hemisphere, particularly in South Africa and maybe Australia, New Zealand, it's totally different. I mean, it comes with its own challenges, doesn't it?
It definitely does. It can be very tough. Certainly in the winter, I do sometimes find myself going, oh, do I have to go out for this run now? It's really cold. It's dark. If you want to train in daylight, you have to go running at lunchtime. otherwise. So I love training at the weekends because I can run in sort of late morning when it's light. But in the week, it's definitely a bit of a challenge. And I spend a lot of time in the pool because it's a little bit easier to do that than go out for a run in the dark.
You talk about scraping the ice off the cars. Do you have to scrape the ice off the top of the pool before you get in it?
No, indoor pools only.
Thankfully. Danny, talk to me a little bit about your running background. I mean, how long have you been a runner? Is it something you've always done?
No, I started running about 10 years ago because I was had a BMI fast approaching 30, and I decided I needed to do something, and I don't do half measures, so I signed up for a half marathon. Had 9 months of training, got ridiculously injured, but it ran my half marathon, and by that point I had the bug, and have been running on and off ever since. And I started doing triathlon in 2011. Did that for a few years, was looking for a new challenge, and I'm now ultra running, ultra swimming. So anything slow and really long is what I really like. This year I'm slowing down a little bit. I'm currently 3 months pregnant. So I'm still racing. I raced a 10-mile race yesterday, but beyond that, I'm sort of going to slow down a little bit over the next 2 months and then get back to it after next year.
I mean, you're saying slowing down a bit, you're still training, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have this chat, is because often, and I want to preface this to anybody who's listening who is pregnant and is wanting to continue training, we don't want to give any medical advice, and it's difficult for us to give any medical advice here. First port of call is obviously your gynae or your medical practitioner who's dealing with you, but you've had some interesting challenges in the UK from an advice perspective on how you can continue training when you're pregnant. I know we've spoken a bit in the forums, or Lindsay and you have, and I've seen some of the back and forth. Tell me a little bit about some of the challenges and the advice that you've been given in your sort of journey to being 3 months pregnant and wanting to continue to train.
Yes. So, the first thing in the UK is you don't have that much contact with medical professionals. You get seen by a midwife. You don't really, unless there's a specific problem with your pregnancy, you don't see a doctor generally for the whole of your pregnancy. So I didn't see a midwife until last week. And the general advice I've had from people is, the first question I get when I say I'm pregnant is, but you've stopped running now, haven't you? So there seems to be this massive assumption that you can do a bit of swimming or some yoga, but you're not going to do any massive impact. And I was really relieved yesterday after the race. I ran into a lady who'd just run it as well, who was 21 weeks pregnant. And she had the exact same experience of mostly being told, oh, you have to stop running. The midwife said to me, oh, you can do a little bit of exercise, but you probably shouldn't be racing anymore. After which I went, why not? You know, I'm fine. I've slowed down. I've lost about a minute per kilometer since about October, but in my pace. But beyond that, as long as I feel well, if I feel poorly, I don't run.
Yep.
But as long as I feel well, like yesterday, I went into the race with no expectations. I miscalculated what I needed to run to do my target pace and was running well ahead of pace. It turned out, and I just went, you know what, I'm having fun. It's a beautiful day. It was really sunny yesterday and cold and perfect race conditions. I just carry on pushing, expecting I'd blow up around sort of 10, 12 kilometers. I didn't. I finished quite strong, and I really had fun.
Brilliant. Well, that's amazing. I'm going to hand you over to Lindsay now, and I think Lindsay's got some points he wants to make before we start. So you've got your questions, which I'll hand over to you in a sec. Lindsay, I think the one bit of advice I'm guessing is, if you fall pregnant, now's not the time to start running. If you want to run when you're pregnant, it's probably you need to look at how much you've run prior to. What's your sort of advice on this one?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, I've over many years in different guises worked with pregnant women who are exercising in the field of rehabilitation as a biokineticist, as a coach, as a sports scientist. So over the years have done a fair amount of research on and off, and that is really the most common piece of advice given, or when the question is asked, is it safe to run during pregnancy? And the answer from the research and the reading and talking to actual medical doctors and gynecologists, the answer is yes, as long as you have been running fairly consistently up to that point. And number two, that there aren't any complications. So look, in the UK, that little part there makes it a little bit harder, because how do you know that there are no complications? But, you know, hopefully you do go regularly enough for checkups, that the midwife is happy and that they can tell that the fetus is not in distress. And you also just really listen to your body especially in the first trimester, okay, which is exactly what Danny did. You know, she was feeling really tired. She didn't run. And the first trimester is probably the toughest of the three to keep the running up, because it's when you're going to be probably the most tired. The baby's probably taking most of the energy. There's also often associated nausea. So those are the sort of things in the first trimester that may interfere. Obviously, towards the end of the final trimester, you'll run into issues perhaps around balance, and you've got to be very careful there, because you really want to avoid falling while you're pregnant. So you've got to take into account that your body will have changed, and you may not be able to do the things that you did do before. Might start becoming uncomfortable sleeping, so the fatigue probably returns in that third trimester. So it becomes very important to just monitor how you're feeling, and if you're not feeling well, you adjust accordingly. But you know, from talking to loads of females, unfortunately this is something we can't have too intimate a knowledge about as males, but the second trimester is really when pregnancy is at its best. Hormones are starting to adapt a little bit better, feeling much better, not as tired. Some of the hormones that are actually helping you to get fitter, because what they're trying to do is prepare you for childbirth. So on the whole, you should be feeling a whole lot better during this period. And I think you need to look out a little harder at the little things. So you want to eat healthy. You want to make sure that you're getting all the nutrition that you and your child need. They talk about, in quite a bit of the literature I've read, it talks about making sure that you fuel for exercise, to give yourself, make sure that you're fueling before and after and during exercise. And then the other one is that you do want to avoid getting way too hot, which is probably not going to happen in the UK this time of year, but I'd avoid things like hot yoga, avoid things like saunering while you're pregnant, because you don't want to get your internal body temperature too high, because that really does distress the fetus out.
Danny, on your part, I mean, specific questions, I know you've got a couple of things you wanted to ask Lindsay, and I'm going to open it up to you and hand it over to you to sort of use this time and get the help that you need.
Yes, thank you. So one of the things I've noticed, especially in first trimester, I was really tired. I've had to give up on a lot of my quality sessions, so a lot of my speed training. I've managed to start doing some tempo runs more recently, but because I'm so tired and because I need to cut down, I was wondering, what would you suggest in terms of getting quality sessions in, but making sure that they're less than about an hour, ideally less than 45 minutes. Can you give me some advice on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of this answer is also just looking at what is the role that quality session is playing. And that quality session is playing the role of some anaerobic stimulation, but much more importantly, getting that leg turnover up, improving coordination, speed of muscle contraction, those sort of things. And those type of changes can absolutely be done with some shorter interval type of sessions. And some of the examples I can give you is a progression run. When you've only got 45 minutes to run, a progression run is an excellent way of doing that, because it essentially incorporates the warm-up as part of the routine. So you don't have to do 10, 15 minute warm up and then get in, because by its nature, you start slow, and every 3 to 5 minutes, you just very gradually increase the speed until you get to a point where you feel like you really are running about as fast as you're comfortable to run. And then you can try and hold that pace for 10 to 15 minutes and then a 5 minute cool down. And so that workout could be anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes, and it's a really good way to just introduce a little bit of speed. The other reason why it's a great workout. So even though it feels pretty hard while you're doing it, it has quite a low sort of volume. So therefore, when you finish, you recover from it quite quickly. So it has quite a low impact. And then, you know, the other way to do it in terms of doing intervals and that sort of thing is really just to go, it's important to warm up and we need some of a cool down. So if we do 10 to 15 minutes just to make sure that you are quite warm up, and then to do a speed play. So rather than a formal, we're going to do 5 times 1K with X amount of recovery, you do a speed play. So you then do intervals, which can be fixed length intervals if it's easier. So you can do 3 minute on, 1 minute off, or 2 minute on, 1 minute off. Or you can literally do, okay, I'm going to run hard for 3 minutes. Okay, now I'm going to jog until I'm recovered. Then I'm going to run hard for 2 minutes. I'm going to jog until I'm recovered. Then I'm going to run hard for 4 minutes. I'm going to jog until, and you pretty much go until, whoops, I've got 5 minutes left. Do my cool down and off you go. So I guess the short answer to that question is we must never be wound up to say that the ideal interval session is X, and therefore if I can't get to that, there's no point in doing it, because then it would be the same as if you're at home and you don't have time to get in your long run. You go, oh, well, I can't do my long run, so stuff it. I'm just going to stay here, watch TV, eat popcorn and crisps. You know, 20 minutes of exercise is going to be better than that. So, always just accept that outside of the elite athletes, the rest of us will never have the ideal training environment, time. You know, we can't go down to the track and spend 2 to 2.5 hours to get in a 1 to 1 hour 15 workout. So we'll never warm up like the pros do. We'll never cool down like the pros do. We do the best we can in the time that we've got available.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really helpful. I'll definitely try progression runs and those sort of sessions in the next few weeks. One other thing I read about and wasn't sure what to do with, and I've read about it as an ultra runner as well, was running with poles. Because I've got a last half marathon, which is off-road and really, really hilly, around 24 weeks. And I'm not determined to do it, but I'd like to give it a go. And I was thinking I would try running with poles. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you do want to go off-road, look, again, in this trimester, balance probably isn't going to be too much of an issue. However, using they're almost like ski poles. They're very similar to ski poles. And using poles really does help with balance. And especially when you're on uneven terrain, it makes it much more forgiving. So if you catch a toe or something, it's easy to jam the poles down and to get your balance back. They take a little bit of getting used to running with, but they're very light. So to be honest, once you're in the groove and using them, you almost stop noticing that they're around. They obviously, when you get to like an open road jeep track scenario, running with them is a little bit awkward if you're not putting them into the ground, but they absolutely are quite easy and comfortable to use. And you know, as you may actually find then in the third trimester, if you do want to carry on running, although you're running much slower, it might actually just make you much more comfortable having those with you, because it will help improve the coordination and the odd, like we, as I said, you catch a toe in a root or something like that.
Thank you. And is there anything technique-wise that I do I just use them as I feel comfortable? Is there anything I need to pay attention to?
Yeah, so it'll come fairly naturally to you. In terms of balance, you want to use them the same way that you run, which is actually to be the opposite. Your arms are the opposite of what your legs do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really it. And then once you're going to have, and unfortunately people won't be able to see this, but you can, but you'll be holding them quite near the tops of the poles, almost with your thumb over the top. And that gives you the when you land that pole, it feels much more comfortable. So in other words, you won't use it like a walking stick where your hands are over the top, because mm-hmm. you want to get it out just out in front of your body and work it past and behind you as you move through or move past the pole.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I had another couple of questions which are not necessarily so specific to pregnancy running, but more running in general.
Oh, that's great. So
one of them is training with a heart rate monitor and with heart rate zones. I did that a few years ago and initially had some really good results because I was always running too fast. And when I started training with a heart rate monitor, I learned to run slowly. But as I became sort of more interested in triathlon, a lot of triathletes get incredibly hung up on their zones. Whereas since I've started monitoring my resting heart rate, I've noticed that's all over the place. It can vary. My resting heart rate at the end of December was 69. It is now 61. So I've had some massive variation, probably due to pregnancy. I can be stressed. At other times, like if I drink alcohol, obviously not at the moment, but I've noticed that affects it. Does that influence the zones, and should I get too hung up on the edges of the zones?
So the resting heart rate won't impact much on the zones. Alcohol, excessive heat, stress, those things can also lead to a slight increase in exercising heart rate. So on the days where you know everything is fairly equal, you pretty much know that you're not stressed, you haven't had a couple of drinks the evening before, it's a fairly pleasant day out, those sort of days, you kind of dial in, what does it feel like to be running at or around about the correct heart rate? Mm-hmm. And then that helps you in subsequent runs where perhaps you are extremely stressed with a deadline or so on at work, and then you've got something to fall back on because you know what it feels like. So training on heart rate absolutely has a place, most notably because of exactly what you said in your intro, is that it helps you not to run too hard on your easy days, okay? What you will find is that this type of training works really quickly, which is what you found last time, and there should be some fairly notable improvements almost week on week for a good couple of weeks, that you at that similarish heart rate, feeling a lot better, starting to run, although it's a slow creep. When you add up the weeks and you look back, there should be a noticeable shift in how much faster you can run at the same heart rate. You will get to a point where that then plateaus. And from that point onwards, it's important to keep running your easy runs as easily as you have been running. But that's the point where then your interval work and your tempo work and your threshold and your progression runs become really important, because then they will provide a new stimulus, which should then in turn play back into the whole system, and you should see an improvement again in your overall running.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant, thank you. And then my last question is sort of slightly related to that, but I was in a room full of triathletes and triathlon coaches the other day, and everybody was talking about testing and how they are testing themselves every 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and all the sort of tests that people were doing. Would you recommend doing quite a bit of testing outside running races? And if so, what sort of tests would you recommend for cycling, swimming, and running?
So early in training or in a training lifespan, let's say that, then I would say there's probably quite a lot of benefit in doing some basic tests. Now, those can fall into quite expensive testing in terms of some physiological stuff that you might need to go to the local university, or they could be time trial type of races. Now, depending on the level of experience of the person you're working with and your own personal experience, we can actually learn a lot from time trials and then use those to set appropriate training zones, either heart rate based or speed-based or power-based if you're moving into the realm of power. So I always look at it and go, okay, a VO2 or a lactate type of test gives us quite good information, but certainly in South Africa, that's quite expensive type of testing. So I always ask myself the question, am I going to get or the information that I'm going to get from that, how long can I use it for, and how important is it in terms of getting the improvement that I want? And normally the answer that I come up with myself is that unless someone is extremely serious about what they're doing, I will almost always lean towards more indirect tests like time trials. And when we get to a point where we can see there are diminishing returns on those improvements on those tests, and again, depending on how serious you are about where you're going and what you want to do, that would be the point where doing some of that physiological testing just to dial those zones in much better than with an educated guess. And so that's kind of how I look at that type of testing. But yeah, otherwise, you know, on the bike, doing 20 to 30 K, time trials on the bike, in the pool, doing 300 to 800 meter time trials, swimming time trials, and running, doing between 4 and 10 K time trials. That gives us a lot of very useful information to be able to dial in on those zones.
Mm-hmm. And at what frequency roughly would you test? Every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks?
So initially every 4 to 6 weeks, later on every 6 to 8 weeks, and then once if you're dealing with somebody that you've worked with for 2 or 3 seasons, and certainly if I'm dealing with the people on the elite level, then those would probably be 2 to 3 times a year. Depending on what phase of training or competition we're going into, just to have a look and see where we are in comparison to previous years.
Okay, that's really interesting to think about there.
Yeah.
I did have one more question on sort of nutrition and race nutrition, because it's always something I play with, and I always feel like I underfuel for during races because I don't like taking gels. You probably get a question all the time. Any sort of advice on what else to look at? I hate carrying things, but.
Okay. So do you hate the gels because you don't like carrying them, or because the texture of the gel is really not?
The gels I don't mind carrying because they fit in a pocket. I don't like the texture. I found one gel called Talk in the UK, which I can sort of cope with. But I worked out I would need at least 4 to 5 in a marathon. I've never been able to take more than 3 before. My stomach just goes, not doing anymore.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So in a marathon, and I haven't finished reading the article, but I was reading a really cool nutrition review last night, which I will get through in the next 2 days or so. But we generally talk about needing in the region of 1 gram of carbohydrate per kg of body mass. But having read this review, and I obviously need to have a proper look at where everything was referenced, they actually spoke about for up to a marathon, 30 to 60 grams an hour. And that's not taking into account the individual in question. But that's certainly in my own personal experience where I've felt somewhere in the region of 30 to 40 grams per hour has really provided me enough exercise for a marathon. And then for an ultra marathon, when the intensity comes down slightly, so the demands aren't quite as great, then again, I've found personally that 40 to 50 grams is enough. 50 grams starts to get to the point where that takes some planning. But 30 grams is fairly easy. I mean, if you don't like taking gels and you're getting a Gatorade or Energy Powerade sort of equivalent, which is typically 7 to 8 grams of carbohydrate per 100 mils, you are going to be okay with probably 300 grams of fluid per hour, and then 1 or 2 gels or shots or chewables or, you know, something along those lines through the marathon. Of course, again, in the Northern Hemisphere, I've actually found that 300 mils of fluid is quite a lot of fluid to drink, because the thirst drive isn't there. You're not sweating as much as you do in the Southern Hemisphere. So that would be the other component to work on, is what's the comfortable amount of fluids that you can consume off the side of the road. And once you've dialed that in, and I'd imagine it would be somewhere in the region of 150 and maximum 300 mils. I think beyond that, it would get quite difficult. That will then be able to lead you, okay, well, how many gels do I have to want to plan around? Or are there other similarly equal products to carry around that are much easier for me to handle, like chewable versions of, and that can be, you know, almost, I'm pretty sure you get Super Season in the UK, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, those sort of almost not boiled sweets, but the more powder based sweets that you just easily chew up and they break up. Mm-hmm. And then the softer jelly type of sweets, or some soft types of nuts, but that then starts to create an issue with carrying stuff. So that, you know, cashews are great. In South Africa, we get things called nut butters. So they are little packets of either cashew nut butter or macadamia nut butter. They're fairly easy to, well, they're certainly easy to carry, and they're fairly easy to consume. So those are the sort of things you'll need. But you really, for a marathon, you're looking for between 30 and 60, you probably get away quite easily with 30 to 40 grams per hour without running out of energy. Then it becomes a question of playing around with the frequency of consumption, what you're going to take, how does it make you feel, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. That's really useful. Thank you. It sounds like I've actually not been doing too badly in marathons where sweet drinks are available, because I have been drinking those, and those in combination with gels work well.
Yeah, so then you probably are quite close. And look, what I do find in a marathon is that even the ones we have finished pretty strong, the last 5 to 7 Ks, so the last 3 miles or so, it's hard. Your legs are beat up. You're feeling a little bit sorry for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not entirely sure nutrition is ever gonna solve that problem.
Yeah.
Cool. Danny, I think we're pretty much out of time. I don't know if you've got any other questions that you wanted to just shoot off quick, or if that's good.
No, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Danny, it's been amazing catching up. We love chatting to members around the world. And, it's always good for us to be able to put a face to the name. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Danny, before I wrap up, you're obviously a member of our online community, and not 100% sure how you found us, but your experience so far, what are you enjoying about it?
I like that the forums are there, and I sort of look at them. I'm not very active at the moment, but I do love reading sort of other people's questions, and very often people have questions that where I go, oh yeah, that's a really good point, and I like reading those answers. I like the drag and drop training program, so I can plan my week, but then also be flexible about it. It's not like a hard and fast set program, which is great. And I found you because I did Comrades a couple of years ago, and that's sort of when I started looking at Coach Perry, and he did all the online webinars and stuff.
Brilliant. Well, Danny, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for your time. We really do appreciate it. And best of luck. When's the due date?
Start of August.
Awesome. Cool. Fantastic. Danny, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good night.
Fantastic chat with Danny. Best of luck. And we look forward to seeing how you progress. And before I go, just two things we need to take care of. Obviously, another post in our success forum on the Coach Parry Training Club. This one came in from Flox Dibukwane. Flox was saying he ran the Johnson Crane Marathon this year and he got a PB of 4:13, going for a sub-4 next year. I think I can safely rock my Coach Parry graduate T-shirt with pride, slowly getting there. Flox, well done. You put in the hard work and you get rewarded. Nothing like following a very structured training program, doing the right sessions at the right paces, at the right intensities. Definitely helps. Well done. And thank you for sharing that cool story as well. Don't forget, if you'd like to check out the Coach Parry Training Club, all you need to do is head over to coachparry.com/join. You can get access to that right now. And before we go, time to announce our next winner in the Biogen Journey competition. And it's a post that came off Instagram this week, and it was from Warren Barrett. The Instagram handle is WG Barrett, and Warren's training for Comrades 2019 posted a pretty cool pic of himself. Warren, we'll be in touch. Congratulations for sharing your Biogen Journey and using the hashtag on social media. That's hashtag Biogen Journey if you'd like to win. You can also put hashtag Coach Parry in there as well if you'd like, just for a bit of browning points. But we'll pick a winner and we'll announce the next one on next week's podcast. That is it. Have yourself a superb week. And don't forget to check out the Comrades webinar. If you missed it, the success seminar from Monday night, lots of great advice in there. All you need to do is head over to coachparry.com to check out the replay. Until next week, from myself, Brad, and the coach, and the rest of the team here at Coach Parry, have yourself a superb one. Cheers.